Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Mental health rehab techs for the children's department at Behavioral Health. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Okay, so right to start from the beginning. What are we talking about today?
Well, I think we're going to basically talk a little bit about what we do and how we help the children and the parents that we provide services to at the clinic. We're both from the Brawley outpatient clinic, but we also have one in El Centro and in Calexico. We get assigned to different kids from the ages of, I think the youngest I've had is 3 to 18. And at 18, that's when we will transfer them over to the adults clinic if they feel they need to continue services. Mm-hmm. We also will provide different services for the parents of the children and also go to their schools and assist them at school if they're having any problems at school.
Okay. So let's talk about the services at Behavioral Health and what you do as a mental health rehab tech with children. Let's start. What kind of children are you seeing, or what kind of, because we have a lot of parents that are listening to the show, or there are a lot of members in the community that have little ones, have children, either their nephews, their nieces, sisters, brothers, or their sobrino, the godparents, the godchildren, and we have, we're members of the community, and as I said so before, it takes a village to raise a child. So what kind of, as parents, they're listening to the radio, and what would prompt them to call Behavioral Health, first of all? Is it because, I'm a parent, and my child having a 5-year-old, trying to do homework or taking a bath, it's a struggle every night. So is that when it, like me, to call? Okay, I need help, somebody. She doesn't want to take a bath.
Well, parents do have the opportunity to have an assessment be completed by our therapist, in which they will decide if our client or the consumer meets medical necessity. Mm-hmm. We usually work with children who have ADHD, who have depression, who have anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, bipolar. So anything in that realm, definitely we do encourage parents to assist for an evaluation.
Is there an age where they need to start? You only provide services to, or what is the age range?
I believe the age range is four wow. years old all the way to 17.
Oh, wow. So 4-year-olds.
Yes, we've seen also 3-year-olds mm-hmm. being seen for an intake. And usually they're screened out. So,
okay. So once you do the intake and they see that they have a diagnosis of either ADHD or mm-hmm. or post-traumatic stress disorder, or what happens afterwards?
The therapist would determine if the consumer has difficulty in home functioning or school functioning. If their impairments are very severe. They expedite the case immediately to case mm-hmm. management. Our supervisor reviews the intake assessment and then immediately assigns to a case manager.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you guys come in.
Yes, exactly. If the case is not as severe, the therapist recommends for the consumer to start with an initial nursing assessment. Mm-hmm. And then after the nursing assessment, where the client plan is completed, the consumer has an appointment with the psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And with that, the nurse and the doctor determine if, again, the consumer would benefit from case management or any other service.
How is the child behaving during this time? Just going to a doctor, taking them to a doctor is just very, a lot of the kids don't want to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. They're just like, no, I don't want to go, because they think about needles and shots mm-hmm. and just, it's very traumatic. So how is this whole process? How do you make them, just going through the whole process of doing the assessment and going to a nurse and then going to a doctor, and
You kind of have to prep them before. Mm-hmm. I usually, if I have gotten assigned to a kid before they have their initial nursing assessment, I will brief the parent and the child mm-hmm. at the same time of what is going to happen at their next appointment, just so that they're aware, and also to make sure that, you know, it is to inform them that it is important for them to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, you know, basically tell them the forms that we complete. I do tell them of the nurse just getting a medical history about the child, and then also getting the height, the weight, the blood mm-hmm. pressure, and that kind of stuff. And usually the child is okay with all that. I've only had one kid so far that refused to get his blood pressure taken. But but the height and the weight is never a problem. Mm-hmm. So with the doctor as well, I always prep them before their, you know, the doctor's appointment, and you know, inform them that they're not going to give any shots, they're not going to take any blood. It's more of just, you know, sitting there talking to the doctor, and again, maybe the height mm-hmm. and the weight, and that's about it.
Okay.
So most of the time we don't struggle with some of them. There is a few we have to pull from the waiting room into the office. But most of them, I think, are pretty okay with it.
The crying? No. I can yeah. just imagine. Just no.
Yeah. Those are usually the little ones that don't really understand.
No. Oh, especially, I mean, like you said, 3, 4, 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
It's hard. So you get assigned. So what kind of service, what is your role in this whole process?
Our role is definitely to educate our parents, mainly on the services, also on diagnosis and medication mm-hmm. management. It's a lot of linking our parents to services in the community, referring them, advocating for our consumers at school, mm-hmm. Educating parents on the rights they have at school and the services that the school can actually provide in order to help them improve in the school functioning.
Mm-hmm. Most of our referrals come from schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's mainly where a lot of our referrals come from. They were usually for them because of either ADHD or because of symptoms or because of depressive symptoms or noticing them being very isolating or something of that mm-hmm. order. When we get these referrals, we also have a program, VistaSans, that we will link them to,
mm-hmm.
and that's a program that we have through Behavior Health, but it's based at a school, and there's one in Brawley, El Centro, and Calexico, and that is for 7 to 12-year-olds, male and female kids, who may be exhibiting poor social skills,
mm-hmm.
and that can range from different ways of poor social skills, either kids that are fighting all the time with other kids, or ones that are very mm-hmm. shy and don't, you know, have trouble making friends, and that kind of sense.
Why do you think that, you know, most of your referrals come from the schools and not from the parents calling, you know?
Probably because they spend most of the day with the kid. They spend the majority of their day during the weekdays with that mm-hmm. child, you know, in their class all day long, most of the time. And so they get to know them very well. They see their behaviors a lot. And, you know, I think most of the time they get very frustrated or concerned or impatient.
Or trying to manage a classroom with 20 kids, yes. 25 kids, or maybe up to 30 kids in a class.
Yes.
And teachers are trying to teach something.
Mm-hmm.
And here's this, you know, little kid, you know, boy or girl, just acting up and, you know, unable to pay attention. And, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. And you know what I notice a lot, too, is that when the parents do come in, it's sometimes not until the middle or end of the year. And usually, you know, when they come in, either the school will tell us or they will tell us that the school's been telling them to come in since, like, the beginning mm-hmm. of the year. But I don't know, I guess because they feel like, you know, oh, well, it's going to get better. I think they have this hope that, you know, things are going to change or they're going to try and work with them. And they prolong it so they don't end up coming in until, you know, mid or end of the year.
Do you think that's also over. Part of, like, stigma, you know, just the whole, you know, I'm not going to send my child to behavioral health.
That, too.
Yes.
That, too. So, or they automatically assume that if they take their child there, that they'll get put on medication.
Mm-hmm.
And
are there some parents
true.
that don't want medication?
Yes, mm-hmm. there are parents that don't want medication, and that is an option. We can't force them to mm-hmm. put their kids on medication. The doctor is really the only one that will recommend medication or not, because not all children do need medication. Sometimes it's you know, it's not something that they have that cannot be, you know, treated with medication. However, in a lot of cases, especially in the ADHD cases, the medication is very effective mm-hmm. and helpful. I think that the parents are just, I think it is that stigma, and also they're just afraid of the side effects that could possibly mm-hmm. happen. Or I know a lot of very common one is that they're going to get addicted to the medication mm-hmm. or in that something like that.
Especially, you know, how young have you seen that a doctor has put a child in with medication?
Well, for me, I've had one that was had just turned 4.
Wow.
They were just actually kind of waiting for them to turn 4 because I think there's some kind of insurance mm-hmm. Gap that they have to be a certain age. And he had just turned 4. So they're very, very young. But, again, that's always with the parent's consent. That's mm-hmm. not, you know, without, we don't ever do that without the parent consent.
And I've seen it, you know, in my daughter's class, you know, beginning of the year, you know, this student was very active, just, you know, disrupting, and I had to sit with him a couple of times myself as a volunteer parent, just, you know, and I played games, just pretend that you're, you know, you've been glued to the seat, you know, just pretend, you know, and then you can't move, you can't get out of the seat, and it worked for a little bit, but afterwards it just didn't work, and but now, you know, the student was referred, and great. I mean,
yeah.
What a turnaround.
Yeah. I know, I feel almost like we're recruiting sometimes when we go over there to the schools, like unknowingly, because, you know, we'll be over there in a class for one kid, and then the teacher's like, you know, I have this other kid over there that, you know, I think he needs to be seen, he or she needs to be seen too, and, you know, I always give them the mm-hmm. Phone numbers for the parent to call, because mm-hmm. the parent does need to be the one to make the appointment for them or mm-hmm. for the evaluation. So, but yeah, and that's another thing, we get to be in the class and to help the child, you know, where the parents they have that ability or, you know, are able to do that, but they don't always go to this class and, you know, try and, you know, observe to see what their child is doing or try and be there to help them. Sometimes I've seen teachers who require that the parent's there to sit with their kid because they cannot no longer control them. But, you know, we are able to go to the schools and try and provide some services there to the child and then also to the teacher to see, you know, what, you know, try different things that we can work with the child to try and help them do better in school.
What kind of services do you provide? Like, what is it that you can help them with?
We do a lot of behavior modification techniques mm-hmm. with them, which can include, you know, rewards.
And that can also help with the parents,
that
right?
That can help, uh-huh. Positive reinforcement, with whether it's just, you know, verbal praise or different behavior charts. We can also set.
I've done that. It doesn't work for me.
And it doesn't work with everybody. Some parents, you know, they do it and they tell me that it works really great. And then there's some parents that, you know, it just doesn't work for them, you know. And some, I think half the time with a lot of our parents, they're not always consistent with it, too. You know, maybe 1 week they're doing it every single day and it's working pretty okay, and then they kind of dwindle off and stop using it, mm-hmm. you know, every day. So that's another factor that they...
Yeah, I started doing it, and, you know, you put stars whenever they do a chore and everything, and, you know, maybe a sad face if they don't, and, well, it was a dry erase, so I just started erasing it. What happened? She's like looking at me, oh, well, I had a sad face, so she just erased everything. So, yeah, no, it didn't work for me.
Yeah, they don't always work. When one thing fails, we try something
yeah.
else. That's all we can do. I think that's what teachers do, too. Mm-hmm. You know, when one thing fails, all you can do is just try something else and see what works best for that child.
And the same thing with parents, right? Correct.
Yes, and the same thing with parents.
Once a child is put on medication, are they going to be on medication for the rest of their lives, or?
That's definitely up to the doctor mm-hmm. To recommend. Start off with medication.
That would be a concern of a parent.
Medication.
You know, that
yes.
would be a definite concern mm-hmm. for my. You know, okay, yes. You know, if a parent says, okay, yes, my child needs, you know, medication, or I see that they need something, and then that would be a concern once they put on medication. You know, if they're like 6 or 7, are they going to be on it for the rest of their lives, you know, all through the school years? Or
I think it depends on the severity of the condition. Mm-hmm. Like for kids with ADHD, I know that, you know, most of the time we treat them with medication at this age because right now we're trying to teach them coping skills for when they're adults. That way they're not on medication the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to teach them different things to cope with what they have in order to be able to succeed and have a, you know, completely normal and professional life later, and they won't need the medication. But, you know, right now, since they're kids, you know, we rely on that medication to help them right now, mm-hmm. you know, to help them get through school and help them get through home, you know, tasks and chores and that kind of sense. And hopefully later they won't need that. For other kids with, like, the anxiety and depression, I mean, I think that all kind of depends on what their symptoms are like and how the severity of it mm-hmm. later in life.
Just like, or with PTSD, right? Correct? With the trauma?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do is at the next half, we're going to talk more about, you know, the behavior modification skills that you provide to the parents and to the, and also what you do with the child, because it would be very different with working with teenagers and adults, you know, as opposed with working with children.
Yeah.
And, you know, their attention span is very and Bianca's smile, yeah, it's very limited, and
yeah.
you know, they want to do other stuff and mm-hmm. and not necessarily be with you and having, you know, to, so you kind of have to work and do a work play interventions mm-hmm. with
yes.
them
mm-hmm.
and keep their attention span. Bianca. But well, so what we'll do is just take a short break. Right now we're talking with Bianca Soriano and Betsita Chavez.
Good job.
Both are mental health rehab techs with the Department of Behavioral Health at the Children's Department. And we'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio for Imperial and Mexicali Valley. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7, Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874. And we are back with Bianca Soriano and Betsita Chavez.
Yeah.
Both are mental health rehab techs. Rehabilitation technicians for Imperial County Behavioral Health Children's Department. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's get some information out to the parents and to guardians or family members are working with kids, even teachers working with kids, children. Give us some examples of how parents can use some of the skills you teach them. What are, I know you said, we talked about maybe behavioral charts, but in a lot of the struggles a lot of parents have, especially right now, you know, a lot of parents work all day. I know some parents are work all day, and then they have classes. They go to IBC or San Diego State or University of Phoenix, and then they have their own family. Yeah, they have to take care of their husbands also, or, you know, make dinner, homework, and trying to get everything done in one day, in a couple of hours. And then you have their children or kids that are acting up. Maybe they don't want to do their homework. They don't want to take their baths. And how can we help parents?
We can definitely encourage them to structure their home. A lot of parents, like you mentioned, have a very busy life and are juggling with a lot of things at the same time that they don't have time to structure their home. So we definitely encourage parents to have a lot of visualizations, such as chartings, you know, probably have a chart where it's broken down from, you know, time to time. So from 8 to 9, you're going to do this. From 9 to 10, you're going to be doing this. From 11 to 12, you're going to be doing this. So the kid and the parent are also organized at the same mm-hmm. time. Also a lot, like Bianca had mentioned, the behavioral charts, it only takes you maybe less than a minute or 2 minutes to kind of review, okay, you know,
did you,
Juanito,
pick up, yeah.
did you, you know,
take
your shower today?
Shower, yeah.
Oh, you did, let's put a little check here. Did
pick
you?
Up your room or?
Yes, exactly. So it's not time consuming. We also teach them a lot of relaxation techniques. We have a lot of children who are very anxious or are very, very angry. And
why is that? Why is the anxiety? Why anxious about, for example?
They could be anxious because of school, you know, circumstances at home. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of triggers that can make a child anxious. Mm-hmm. So then we teach, again, our consumers and our parents about the relaxation techniques. I love teaching them the deep breathing. and tailoring it to the age as well. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I have a five-year-old who has severe temper tantrums and is not able to control his anger outburst, I usually bring bubbles. I try to make it fun with them, mm-hmm. and also so the parent can also follow through with it throughout the week. I bring bubbles, and I teach the child, okay, you know, once you start feeling angry, or, you know, you start to kind of like, you know, put up a mm-hmm. fist because you want to hit something, or, you know, you want to go and attack your mom, definitely, you need to take a self time out and start, you know, doing some deep breathing. And through the bubbles, they kind of start to mellow down, and their anger starts to decrease or de-escalate. I also bring them balloons.
Oh, that's
they
make
love
it fun.
Balloons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And again, just, you know, teaching them that the deep breathing will actually help them decrease either anxiety or anger outbursts, but at the same time, you make it fun for them.
What do you tell about parents? Because there are a lot of parents that I've talked to, or they have this conception of parents that, you know what, I can discipline my child. So what kind of discipline, you know, do you provide or offer, or ideas of how to discipline your child? Because, you know, they go, well, I can't discipline my child because I might be sent to, you know, Child Protective Services. And we had Child Protective Services here a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. and they said, you know, if you spank them, that's you know, a little swat here on the buttocks or something. It's just the problem is when you start, you know, to break bones, the bruising, the bleeding.
Leaving
that's
marks.
Mm-hmm. Leaving marks, then that's abuse. And so what can parents do, especially for a child that's, you know, out of control, it's going through a temper tantrum. What are parents supposed to do?
Definitely, we do encourage parents not to use corporal mm-hmm. punishment. There are other ways to discipline your children. We do usually make such as a consequence box, and we encourage parents and children to work on it. We, you know, write on pieces of paper, okay, if, you know, don't take a shower today, you're going to have an hour of no TV. Mm-hmm. Or you're not going to go
out. So they
out
pick
and,
up something,
yes.
a little, one of the little cards or something mm-hmm. from the box?
Yes. It could be anything that they enjoy. You're not going to play your video game today. What other consequences?
Well, the thing is with that, the box is that's different than the parent just giving a consequence, mm-hmm. is that the child is the one that chooses these consequences.
Mm-hmm. And they give input as well.
Yeah, they
that's
give
a good idea.
They
I
contribute
like
to the what yes. is put on the slip, so that way it's not anything that they're not expecting. They, you know, we kind of all three sit down together and discuss on what we're going to put on the slips. And, mm-hmm. And me and the parent will modify if we need to. Because of course, a lot of times kids would rather do chores and have stuff taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
But when we want it, we try and do a little bit of both. Actually, we try and do the chores, the taking toys away, and then also of timeouts, depending on the age.
Mm-hmm.
And we will kind of do a combination of all three. And then also, what I like to do is I'll give the parent a couple of blank slips, and I'll have them throw those in there. As like freebies, mm-hmm. if they feel like they've been doing, you know, pretty well with complying with their consequences.
That's
so then
idea.
They get an extra, you know, little like free tickets in there if they choose that one,
mm-hmm.
because
yes.
they're all folded up.
That's a good idea. I'm gonna try that. What other things do you do? And I mean the play thing, that the balloons and the bubbles, those are good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you always work with? Do you ever work with other props?
Well, I do bring a lot of crayons. Mm-hmm. We do have worksheets where we teach our consumers about feelings, and they love to draw.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach them about the different feelings, and that it is normal for everybody to feel angry at some time, sad, anxious, scared.
Mm-hmm.
But that in order for us to express it in a positive way is either verbalizing it, using I statements,
mm-hmm.
instead of yelling, cursing, or even hitting
mm-hmm.
themselves or parents or even, you know, the walls.
And these services, are they provided at the school or at the clinic, or where are these services provided?
It could be provided anywhere. If they're waiting for a nurse appointment and the case managers there were definitely able and capable of meeting with the client and reinforcing what we taught them mm-hmm. at school as well and at home.
At home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Primarily at home. Mm-hmm. Primarily at home mm-hmm. since we do home visits. We do them at home. And, you know, I've noticed that sometimes with the children that are unable to sit still or very distracted or running around and you're trying to talk to them, but they're mm-hmm. getting up and down, running all over the place. For that kind of sense, it works better when I meet with the parent at home and no kids are there. So mm-hmm. that way he or she has their entire focus on me. And they're able to listen, because when the kids are running around and they're yelling and stuff, I mean, the parent loses attention, too, mm-hmm. because they're constantly running around looking at the child or yelling at them to come sit down or chasing them or whatever. So, you know, I'll meet with the parent at home and talk with them and, you know, discuss different interventions and things that they can work on. And then I'll meet with the child at school where they kind of have a little bit, you know, more you know, I think they like being out of class, or they don't really mind, so they'll have their mind mm-hmm. more focus on what we're talking about. And then especially since at schools they usually provide like a little classroom or a little mm-hmm. office or something that we can meet in, they don't really have other things that they could be playing with. Mm-hmm. Their toys are not there. Their, you know, TV is not on.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have more of a focus on me.
You know, by getting a little bit off subject, in the newspaper, I think it was in the weekend, or I'm not sure, it was talking about bullying at the schools, especially, you know, special education or kids who are being pulled. You know, you're going to the school and then you're meeting with the kids at mm-hmm. school. Do you encounter have you seen a lot of the kids coming through behavioral health that maybe have anxiety because of bullying?
Not a lot, but we have had a few. I have one right now that's been having that concern, and that was the whole reason why she came to behavioral health, because of this, of how she's been feeling because of the bullying that's been going on in school.
Right.
Anxiety, and then she's reporting a lot of sadness.
Depression.
Uh-huh. So, you know, the doctor did start her on medication in her case, and she's been showing no anxiety and no more crying, but she still feels a lot of sadness because it is still continuing at school.
So what do you do? I mean, what kind of interventions can you provide? And also to the parents, you know, it came on the article right there about bullying, mm-hmm. and the mother has the concerns, and I think it was also both of her children were being seen by behavioral health, mm-hmm. and, you know, how can we help them? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of bullying, and especially now that back then, if you were bullied, you were bullied at school, but now with social media and access to your phone and texting and computer, you can be bullied 24/7 every mm-hmm. at night.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. posting comments. Maybe not as little for the little kids, but you know, the teenagers, the 12, 13-year-olds that have access. You know, they're very 9-year-olds, very mm-hmm. good with. Well, actually, 5-year-olds are good with the internet too. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
But you know, what can you do? What kind of services we can provide?
Well, like Bianca had mentioned, I also had a adolescent who was being bullied at school, and my way of approach was to have mom contact the school and meet with the counselors and verify what kind of plan the school has in order to discipline those who are being bullied or the ones that are bullying. Mom was constantly going to the school and verifying, okay, what is the plan, to the point where the school did pay attention to the mom. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot has to do with mom and parents being very, very consistent with mm-hmm. my child is being bullied, what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
What is the plan?
Mm-hmm.
And also have the child present so they know, you know what, I will be safe here at school because I know that the vice principal, the psychologist,
mm-hmm.
and the counselor will be working in order to decrease all, you know, the bullying. And also work with the child who is being bullied
mm-hmm.
To improve their self-esteem, because a lot of bullies target those who have poor self-esteem, who are weak.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of work on their self. And
a lot of times the bulliers are themselves yes. going through some other.
Exactly. It could
and
be
that's why they feel they want to mm-hmm. bully, because yeah. they also have.
They're probably being bullied at home mm-hmm. by an older sibling. So it's kind of like a little domino effect,
mm-hmm.
and just empowering our children to stand up for themselves and say, no, this needs to stop.
And for little kids, it'd be much harder. I mean, I can see it, you know, sometimes, you know, my daughter says a couple of things, and you as a parent have to, you know, you don't say those things. You know, just, you know, so you have to kind of, like, start from the beginning. It's just, you know, when they're at school, you know, you don't have control over them. You know, you have to depend also on the school, you know, rely on them.
Mm-hmm.
But also when they come back to you, is you have to reinforce those positive reinforcements on your children.
Mm-hmm. And also try and teach them to stand up for themselves in a way to, you know, kind of empower them. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily mean that they have to bully back, but
it's
more
saying no, stop
yeah,
doing
you know,
that. You know,
saying something
saying
to
that.
Them or walking away or, you know, immediately going and telling the teacher. Because, you know, some kids don't wait several months, of, you know, before they even speak up to tell even their parent or somebody that, you know, that this has been going on. Or, you know, I know I've had another one case where it was more junior high age, and
that's tough. The junior high,
and that was something spread on Facebook about my you know kid, and he, as soon as he went to school, I mean, all the kids were saying something to him, so he, you know, has been having a tough time with his attendance because he just doesn't want to hear it, doesn't want to, you know, to hear anything from those kids. And you know, it's a lot tougher there because at least with the little ones, they're easy. They know you don't have to do a whole lot for them to tell who it is, the exact names and everything. But the older ones, they are more scared. They're more don't want to tell who is doing that to them, what the names are to the school, to anybody. They keep it more private. So it is very a lot harder. I think
it's teenagers. I mean, when they get into junior high, it's more challenging.
Yes.
And if and high school, and then in high school, it just can continue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It does.
It's tough. But, yeah, that's why I brought up bringing about bullying, because I get it's a concern. The schools have made a lot of comments and has brought up the concern about, you know, the bullying, and parents have brought up the issue about bullying. And, you know, in the media also about bullying, a lot of kids have been bullied to the point that they have taken their own lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become very, imminent situation. You're just a threat to the kids and to, you know, you go to school to learn and not being able to learn because you're being bullied and the anxiety that they have, the depression.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's when you guys step in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And provide services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the main changes would come from the school than from us. I think we're kind of there to try and help them cope with it.
With them working with them only.
Mm-hmm. And then, but also, you know, and advocating for them at the school. But the school is the one that has, I think, is the main ones that have to do a lot of the changes.
Yeah, because all the kids are there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Well, but I mean, what can you do? Can you take away their cell phones? Probably. I don't know. You know, not access to their on the internet, on Facebook or any of the social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, parents should be monitoring that regardless. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if any kids under, you know, I think 18, they should be monitoring their accounts.
Have the passwords and everything.
Yes, because no matter what it is that they're doing, you know, you should be monitoring it regardless of what. I don't know. I mean, some parents I know that allow their kids to have Facebook accounts and that kind of stuff. But
I don't have Facebook.
But
I'm
but they monitor it. You know, the parents always, you know, are, you know, guarantee me that I know the password and everything, and I check on there every day to check what they're doing and stuff. And so in that case, you know, then that's up to them. But, you know, for the other cases where they are allowed to be on there whenever and saying things on there, I don't think it's a good thing for them to be doing.
Twitter accounts, have Facebook.
Twitter.
Twitter. See, I don't even have that either.
I don't have that either.
I go, no, I don't want to. I'm afraid. I'm good.
Haley probably has a Twitter account.
No. But she probably will. But, you know, just a lot of the services that you provide is something trying to prevent them from, you know, we have a lot of kids that never got any type of services, and they went through their life, probably never been diagnosed with ADHD or with, you know, anxiety, nothing, and it just harmed them. It just cost them, you know, in the future, maybe not, they weren't able to get their high school diplomas, maybe they're involved in the juvenile, graduate from juvenile to adult, you know, in the legal system, or it's so... It's very important for teachers and for parents to see that, you know what, maybe have a concern, or kind of, you know, maybe my child, you know, doesn't pay attention or just not, you know, give you, where can they call you?
They could call the different, well, we have our main line, and I can't remember what that number is. Actually, I think it's maybe like 482-4000, and they can direct them. That's, I think, the switchboard line. They can direct them to wherever they're usually living. That's the clinic that they will direct them to, since we have a clinic in basically almost every...
In Calexico, Centro,
and Brawley. And then I think Imperial and Hopeville, that population is also carried through onto the El Centro clinic. So they can refer them to the different access workers that are for each clinic and which city that is where they live. That way it's closer for them. And from there they talk to the access worker and they'll schedule them an assessment.
Okay. And then it's going to be just right away services in English, Spanish. Services are provided bilingual.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's a lot of the parents, you know, for example, for me, you know, I'm bilingual, so my daughter, you know, spoke, you know, Spanish, and then eventually, well, she spoke English and Spanish, but some kids learn Spanish only first.
Yes.
And then English later, so. Mm-hmm. Okay. So bilingual?
Bilingual.
Mm-hmm. Any other languages besides Spanish?
Yes.
Farsi.
Other interpreters that come in, but not us.
Chinese, French, Japanese.
And we've actually had one that I know that I had that had a sign language interpreter for the parent, because the parent was deaf. They even have that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So easy access regionally. You can go to the homes, to the schools, to the clinic, bilingual. So everything. Mobile?
Well, we are mobile. Case managers are mobile. So,
and then the child's not mobile.
Okay. Well, thank you, Betsita.
Thank you,
Bianca,
for
coming and giving us some information on mental health rehab, some services, case management services for the children's department. And again, if the teachers want more information or if parents want more information, they can call 760-482-4000, and they can direct you to the clinics, different clinics, either the Brawley, El Centro, or Calexico clinics. And I think, and you have one also at Winter Haven, too.
Yes, I forgot about Winter Haven.
Winter Haven, yes. There's also one at Winter Haven, all of there. So,
and for the Brawley, I forgot to mention, it's not just Brawley that we provide to, it's all the North End. Mm-hmm. So it would include Salton City,
Bombay Beach,
Nyland, Calipat. All the whole North
Westmoreland,
End.
Westmoreland. Mm-hmm. All of the Westmoreland.
So we do provide all the way, all of to those cities as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming. And, you know, you need to come back again and get more information. Maybe on bullying. More information on bullying.
Yeah.
More information,
true.
Because that's a big topic, right? A hot topic. So like a hot topic.
We would love to come.
Yes. Well, thanks. I think this weekend they have at the Barberworth the Dancing with the Stars annual. So that'll be fun, you know.
Are you dancing?
No, not me. Not me. But one of the people I know that he's going to be dancing some salsa, so that'll be fun. So if they need information, they can always contact, I guess, Barbara Ward. But, yeah, I think that's one of the community happenings. And last week was a children's fair, and I think it was a big success in behavioral health.
I worked the booth, and we did have quite a few people there. It was very hot, but there was quite a few people coming in. We did a lot of little activities with the kids.
So, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being involved in the community. Thank you so much. And Scott was involved in the walking in her shoes for the sexual domestic violence. So we're involved in the community. Thank you again.
Thank you, Maria.
We'll hear from you hopefully next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.